Hey everybody, hello.
Hi, good evening.
If you can get your seats, that'd be cool. Welcome to the Spring Street Center, also the home of Subud, Greater Seattle. I'm Paul Nelson, and delighted tonight to present an evening with Sam Hamill and Ian Boyden. A clap is good. Applause. You look at these pieces of art, and I've never seen a book like that. Available, too, by the way, $10,000. They won't take a check. I already asked, so you can't do that.
No, that was the old price. It's almost out of print.
I see.
Now it's more.
It's gone up. It's a good investment.
And because we're presenting it tonight, tomorrow it'll be even more.
There you go.
So it'll be looked upon by even more eyes.
Strike while the iron is hot.
Yeah.
That's right. First of all, I want to give thanks to Subud Greater Seattle for supporting this reading by providing the space. The space is available for rentals, weddings. In fact, same-sex weddings, thankfully, with R74. Outstanding. 70% of voters under 30 voted in support of that measure, so that tells you something. It reminds me of the Max Planck line about 100 years ago. He said, "Science changes one funeral at a time." So progress is slow, but it happens. I also want to thank the Subud International Cultural Association, SICA, for supporting this reading and supporting culture and the evolution of culture in the world. So we're grateful for their support. So I'll introduce the two gentlemen. There will be a short talk. There will be a poetry reading from Sam's new book, Border Songs, and then Q&A afterwards. So Sam Hamill, if you don't know, is founding editor of Copper Canyon Press. He ran that for 32 years. He wrote and produced more than 40 volumes of poetry, essays, and translations from ancient Chinese, Japanese, Greek, Latin, and Estonian. He founded Poets Against the War, the largest single-theme anthology in all of history, over 30,000 poems by 26,000 poets. It's now archived at Ohio State University. His brand new book is called Border Songs, which is published by Word Palace Press. Other recent books include Almost Paradise, Selected Poems and Translations, and Measured by Stone, Curbstone Press. Great blurb from Jim Harrison. Sam Hamill has reached a category of national treasure, though I doubt he'd like the idea. You like the idea? No, I didn't think so. Ian Boyden is an artist and writer. He currently works in the Blue Mountains southeast of Walla Walla. His practice in both his paintings and books displays a fundamental drive to link the literary, material, and visual imagination. He makes his own paints and inks from unusual materials such as meteorites. And there was good news today when a friend of his, representing him at an auction, was able to buy a meteorite at less than one-third the price. So congratulations to Ian for the new addition to the family, I guess.
All right, there you go.
In addition to meteorites, he also makes inks from shark teeth and freshwater pearls, among other things. He often works in collaboration with other writers, artists, and scientists. His work has been exhibited widely and is found in many public collections, including Reed College, the Portland Art Museum, the Victoria and Albert Museum, and Suzhou Museum in China. IanBoyden.com is his website. Please welcome Sam Hamill and Ian Boyden.
I think I'm just going to take the stage before Sam can even get up here. Hey, I'd really like to thank everybody for coming out here this evening. It's really a pleasure, and thank you for providing this space. It's really, really wonderful. What I'm going to do this evening is I'm going to talk briefly about two books, one which is Habitations and the other is Edible Earth, and these are two collaborative books that I put together with Sam Hamill. Over the past, whatever it is, 4 years now, 4 or 5 years. And I thought I'd start by just telling you a little bit about how he and I came to know each other. When I started making books in 1998, the primary model that I was looking at was the fine press editions of Copper Canyon Press. And these were books that Sam had made. I didn't know Sam. I knew of Sam, And I loved those books. I loved how tactile they were and how they felt in my hand. And because I really love to read and I'm constantly handling books, the experience of holding a book which has been really well cared for in its production is really special. It really does something for you. And so I was curious about that. I wanted to know how those were made, what went into them, all that sort of stuff. And that curiosity regarding books ended up dislodging me from grad school. I was studying Asian art history at the time, kind of preparing myself for some sort of itinerant life in academia, you know, leading me from job to job, and instead it sent me into these terrible dark chasms without any ventilation, handling lead tight and, you know, trying to listen to the sound of ink on presses and how do you make all these things happen. And skip forward several years, 2003, I believe, we went to the AWP conference in Vancouver, British Columbia, and I got a little table there to show people my books. This is the Associated Writers Programs conference, and writers from all over the country, all over the world, you know, come to wherever this conference is happening. And small presses, various presses, academic presses, all get tables to show their wares. So I thought, well, I'll get myself a table. And I set up this table, and because I was one of the last people to get a table, I got a table that was far, far away in this little corner off away from where everything else was happening. And I put up a few books. And I went out and I was trying to find, you know, various authors that I was really interested in. And Jennifer, my wife, who's sitting here in the very center of the room, was at the table when who should show up but Sam. And he's looking at his book like, wow, you know, these are really cool. And, you know, talked to her, and she said, well, you should come back, you know, as my husband makes these. And he did, gave me his card and his phone number and his address. And I began this wonderful correspondence with Sam over the course of 4 or 5 years. I sent him catalogs of my work and my paintings. Wrote all sorts of letters back and forth talking about stuff. And in return, he would send me copies of his books. So I have this huge, I'm one of the most extensive libraries of Sam Hamill books, I think, out there. And one day I was like, gosh, I should send him a painting as thanks for all these things. And I did. And then I didn't hear anything from him. I thought, oh no, you know. Because it's kind of a private thing, you know? You send out this painting, he's never said he likes my paintings. And I thought, well, gosh, I just kind of overstepped some sort of crucial boundary. You never know where those are going to exist. And I waited, and then I waited and some more, and finally I was like, oh, you know what? I'm just going to write to him and say, or call him. Maybe I called him, I don't remember. And say, you know, forget the painting. Let's go back to writing writing these letters, because they're so much fun. And instead, I got this great note back from him saying, oh gosh, nothing of the sort. He says, I've been trying to figure out how to respond to you. The problem is, your painting has been sitting at my table on one of the chairs because I don't have room on my walls, and it's been my two-dimensional drinking partner now for the last 2 months. And as a result, I haven't been able to get anything done. And a few weeks later, he sent me the first stanza of this poem called Habitations. I never received a poem from a poet, you know, other than my wife Jennifer. And so to receive this thing was just like the most amazing thing that I'd ever received. And it was a poem that addressed my own work. It addressed my own painting and a lot of the philosophy and ideas behind what it is that I do. And then a few weeks later, suddenly, it wasn't just one stanza, but an 11, or not one part, but an 11-part poem, this huge poem that arrived that addressed my work and addressed this friendship, this epistolary friendship that had formed between us. It's a really, really moving piece. And so what I decided at that moment was that I would take this opportunity to then paint back into a poem which had been written about my work. So it became this reciprocal journey. And what's great about it is that Sam really picked up on this fact that I love to paint with materials which are really unusual. And Paul mentioned some of them, meteorites and freshwater pearls and fossilized shark teeth. And you can add to that a cave bear teeth and a malachite and lapis lazuli and carbon that I collect from the stove, my own wood-fired stove in my house. And so within each poem then, I've isolated the materials that he talked about, and I processed those, and I made my own paints out of those materials. And I found different types of compositions that were within them, different ways in which he was capturing momentum and other issues, which are really near and dear to my heart. So I'm gonna show you a few of these pages here. Are you gonna read from this poem tonight?
Pardon?
Are you gonna read from Habitations tonight?
Not that one.
Okay, so we'll get to that. So I won't read from it either then. This book is edition, there's 10 copies of this book. Everything that you see here is an original painting. So while I say it's an edition of 10 copies, each copy is unique, because every single painting that you see here is a unique painting. So each book contains 18 original paintings, and you'll see there's a lot of carbon. All the black that's here is carbon, these huge floods of carbon that I put out across the page. And then the type all appears as white on here. And that's not printed. This book is the first of its kind, and what I did was I used a laser, an industrial laser, and I set it so that I could engrave, so I could actually remove this layer of carbon to reveal the paper below. So it's actually a three-dimensional image inside of here. And the idea behind that is that when you engrave text into this paper itself, that this text is no longer a material addition to the page, which has been the case for books since books began, basically. Instead, it's a material reduction, like a cuneiform tablet, or like monumental lettering on our banks or on gravestones. And when text is written, when text is a material absence, what text is actually air. It's the very material that I'm using right now to vocalize my speech. So it's allied with the very voice box of the poet himself. And I like that. I'll just show you a few of these pages. This is that first stanza that he sent to me.
Can I ask a question
real quick?
Because as you're turning the pages, how do you make sure that it doesn't rub off? Is there some sort of fixture that you coat it with so that it stays that way?
Yeah, it's a great question. So, yes, when you make a paint or an ink, there's basically, you need two materials. You need a pigment and you need a binder, okay? And the pigment is what gives you color, black, or in this case, here's this ochre color. You know, here you have this light speckling of white, that's fossilized wood, okay? If you don't have a binder, I could add pigment to this paper all day long and it would just fall off, okay? So you have to figure out what that binder is gonna be. And part of my process, one of the things I love the most is figuring out binders, because they all have their own organic chemistry. And you can do some really amazing things with those, especially when you're working in with big aqueous systems like I am. And then ultimately I do cover the entire thing then with a very fine layer of protection. And that allows for your hands to touch it and not influence it as much. You could actually clean the surface with a lightly damp rag. See here. This is here's an instance where this is made with ground fossilized shark teeth. It's one of my favorite pigments here. This is a pigment that's made with the fossilized whale bone, or ear bone of a whale. And in here he has this line, the whale's ear bone, the great tree blown down, each turning to stone, ground into powder for ink. And so you can see there's a lot of self-referential activity that's happening inside of this book. And I can show you more of this later after Sam reads. And we can talk about it more. When I had when I finished this book, I went to Port Townsend to visit Sam, and I took a copy of this book to him, and I gave it to him. And we had this absolutely fantastic night, and I went away the next day and drove back to Walla Walla and sort of celebrated having completed this book. The book took me over a year to make. To produce it, I produced over 380 paintings in a single year. It was an incredibly radical year for me. I learned a lot about painting because of this book. And about a month and a half, 2 months later, I received a letter from Sam saying, "Ian, I've got news for you. Habitations isn't a single poem.
No.
It's actually three parts." And there's this sort of long gestation period that had taken place, and he'd been working on this and realized that these other poems that he had been working on were part of this larger series. And so he sent those to me, and I realized, well, gosh, you know, I have to make two more books. And I've been paralyzed by that ever since.
That's not why I wrote them. I'm not that smart.
I think otherwise. And because I had made this as sort of it was an object in and of itself. And so when you're then faced with this, you're faced with this really interesting dilemma. How do you bring these other things into parity with that? And I could make two other books that would be the same format and size and painting, but it's not my character to do that. I'm a very, very restless mind. And I want to always be trying to do something new, something which is pushing some sort of boundary, some sort of something that I understand materially, philosophically, all those spiritually, whatever that is. And so I was also in the process of moving, and there's a lot of turmoil. And I had multiple false starts on these other two poems. And ultimately, this last year, I moved to China, and I was living there. When I realized that I had a solution for the third poem, and this is a poem called Edible Earth. And that's what we have over here. I'm just going to walk down over here. Maybe I'll set it up. If I set it up vertically, maybe you guys can see it.
We decided this runs about 42 meters.
It's a very long book. I don't know if you guys can see this or not, but I went to China to research the history of Chinese inks. And Chinese carbon inks are some of the most sophisticated, beautiful inks in the world. And they're utterly archival. So material which is written with this ink 1,800 years ago actually looks as fresh and vibrant today as it was when it was written. You can't say that about the inks that are little ballpoint pens and stuff that we use now. I don't know how many of you try to do your taxes, and at the end of the year your receipts are completely illegible. That's the state of our inks. We just don't care about that stuff. And so those carbon inks are really magical. How do you get that carbon? You get it from burning trees, from burning organic material. And I just love the blacks, these sensuous blacks that are inside of these carbon-based inks. And so I began to research where that comes from, and part of that ended up being this sort of fortuitous moment where I was up in central Washington, up near Winthrop. I don't know if any of you are familiar with that area. And I'd been hiking up in the North Cascades, and there was this incredible forest fire that had happened there the year before called the Tripod Complex Fire, and I ended up walking into this aftermath of this giant forest fire, which really challenged me. These are objects that they're like
giant Magdalena Anaconda sculptures. These are the most powerful, strange distortions of trees that I've ever seen. And I've photographed them extensively in preparation, in part for this journey to China to study the history of Chinese inks. And so I was in China, I bought this big printer, and it's made by Epson, and discovered that you can buy these giant sets of inks, which are also all amorphous carbon inks. So it gave me this opportunity to print these images of these trees using the very material of the tree itself. And I was really, I just loved that. And I spent several months trying to figure out how to prepare these Chinese papers so that they would accept these really, really delicate inks and accept these photographs. So I was in the process of doing that when I realized that these trees were these burnt trees where these had been completely consumed by fire, and that they had this wonderful counterpoint to this poem, the final poem in the series called Edible Earth. And so I sent these images off to Sam, and again we began this conversation looking at how these things, these poems and the words in these images related to each other. And this is the piece that resulted in that. And ultimately, these two books formed part of this exhibition at the Suzhou Museum this summer in July. And we got Sam over there, and we had a really wonderful time. So
we did.
Yeah. So we can look at these more. I don't want to take up any more time for Sam's reading than possible. So I'm going to turn over the stage to Sam. You read afterwards if you guys are interested in seeing more of these books and having a chance to look through them. Let's do it.